Whether it's her first Mother's Day or her 40th, she deserves more. Shop tons of stunning on-trend jewelry for every budget at Diamonds Direct. Diamond fashion jewelry, beautiful birthstones, everyday pearls, starting at just $200. Commemorate the real loves of her life with a gorgeous pendant featuring the birthstone of the one who made her mom. This Mother's Day, Diamonds Direct has everything you need to say thank you. Diamonds Direct, your love, our passion. Online at DiamondsDirect.com.
This is your moment, your time to shine, your comeback. You're ready for the next step in your career, and you want an education employers respect. So you're not just going back to school. You're coming back with Purdue Global. Backed by Purdue University, one of the nation's most respected public universities, Purdue Global is built for people who bring their life experience into the online classroom. Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
When you have insurance, it's easy to forget about your out-of-pocket costs. That can be a lot of money. How do you know you're not overpaying? HealthLock can help. HealthLock is a technology company that securely connects with your insurance and reviews your claims for overbilling, wrong codes, and even fraud. To date, HealthLock has saved its members over $130 million. To save, visit HealthLock.com. Do it today before you see another healthcare provider.
When you buy Kroger brand products, you feel like you're winning. That's because they offer proven quality at lower than low prices. In fact, we guarantee that you and your family will love how Kroger brand products taste, or you get your money back. So next time you're shopping for the family, look for delicious Kroger brand products, because they'll make you all feel like you're winning. Shop now, in-store, or online. Kroger, fresh for everyone.
Hi, I'm Molly Jongfast, and this is Fast Politics, where we discuss the top political headlines with some of today's best minds. We're on vacation, but that doesn't mean we don't have an amazing show for you today. Mark Roscoe Lusto drops by to talk to us about his recent trip to Ukraine, but first we have Law Dork News's Chris Geidner. Welcome back to Fast Politics, Chris.
Hi.
I'm so excited to have you. This Supreme Court season, they took the pills, the abortion pills. They have a case with that. They have a lot of stuff on their docket that could be really fucked. Discuss.
This is a big term. We say that every year. And sadly, it's often true. I mean, we've now got this possibility of Trump-related cases going up quickly. We've got this case over medication abortion. We've got these really big cases over the administrative state, which sounds really intricate and boring, but it really comes down to who in our government has the power and whether the executive branch is actually able to govern, or whether the Supreme Court is just going to have the final say and be able to tell us at all times what government is able to do.
I mean, I've heard a lot of speculation, read a lot of speculation about the Supreme Court and what it might do and how it might try to prove itself to be less insane than it has. I mean, am I just the boy whistling in the dark to keep myself from being afraid?
I don't think you are completely, with the caveat that anything can always get worse. I think that we are seeing evidence that the public attention and public pressure on the court is having an effect. And that is a good thing, I think. We are seeing evidence that particularly Chief Justice Roberts and then the three Trump appointees who, let's face it, they're looking at this as, I'm going to be on the court for the next 20 years or so or longer. And so it's not necessarily a 1 month decision about what to do. And they are looking at the long-term implications for the credibility of the court and realizing that you might need to find some limits or you're going to lose all of your authority.
It's true. There's a lot. I mean, I'm looking at the docket now and I'm just looking at all these cases, Purdue Pharma case. I mean, there's some environmental cases. There's Moore versus United States. Well, there's another NRA case. I mean, what are you looking at here?
The Moore case is a perfect example. It's a case that when the justices took it, it's about this whether unrealized income can be taxed under the 16th Amendment. And the original sort of take when the Supreme Court took it was this could be a huge case where they essentially rule any wealth tax off the board.
Which is the dream. Let's be honest. All those billionaires, that's their dream.
The Wall Street Journal issued an editorial the day after the Supreme Court granted cert saying this is a really big case about the wealth tax. But then we got into arguments and it turned out to sort of be, I mean, it's not obviously not a dud of a case. It's still important. But the debate and discussion ended up being over a much more narrow issue. And it seems like we're going to get a lot of that this term, where it only takes four justices to grant cert in a case, to agree to hear a case. But that doesn't mean that that's where a case is going to end. This is the fallout from Dobbs. We've talked for a year and a half about the fallout from Dobbs on abortion, both for restrictions and also for how it's sort of changed the electorate. But I think there's a real long-term effect on the court, or at least a midterm effect on the court, that they realize that there are political, small p, political consequences to the courts standing in society when they go too far. We're watching cases like Moore. We're watching cases like it was originally Loper Bright Enterprises, but now it's this case called Relentless that is addressing how much deference federal agencies get at interpreting laws. And the reality is that the federal government is so big that you need to give some deference to agencies or you're not going to be able to run a government. But the counter of that is maybe there are some people who don't want the federal government to be able to run. And so they would like that deference to be gone. And we're going to have arguments in that case toward the middle of January.
And then there's the big blockbuster, which is Rahimi.
There was the big blockbuster, Rahimi, and then we heard arguments in it. And this is the case about there's a federal law that if somebody has a standing domestic violence restraining order out against them, that they cannot have a firearm. And the question in the case is whether that federal law is unconstitutional under the Second Amendment in light of this Clarence Thomas inspired Second Amendment history and tradition.
If the founding fathers could beat their wives, then why can't people now?
Yeah, that's sort of the harsh end of Clarence Thomas's interpretation of the Second Amendment. And this case is a put your money where your mouth is case in a way. And when we heard arguments, it sounded like a whole lot of the court is not willing to go that far. And they're likely to sort of pull back on what Bruin means in practice. Bruin was the case striking down New York's gun case.
Right. That's interesting because they just decided Bruin like 10 yeah. weeks ago. I mean, why do you think that is?
I think it was another situation like Dobbs where the Supreme Court has been going since Heller for nearly 20 years in this direction of a robust Second Amendment right. And Bruin came down.
And the goal with Bruin was to limit states, cities, municipalities from being able to craft their own gun restrictions. Yeah.
And it seemed like it was sort of this goal was being reached from the right, from the NRA people. But then reality set in. And as is the modern reality in America, there were a lot of mass shootings. And it became pretty clear that this was not going to be a workable solution. And so we got the Rahimi arguments that were very skeptical of a world in which this federal law would not be allowed. And then we, perhaps even more surprisingly, just in December here, the Supreme Court allowed Illinois' assault weapons ban to remain in effect during litigation after the Seventh Circuit had held that the ban was allowed. The Supreme Court, the challengers to Illinois' law, came up to the Supreme Court on the shadow docket and asked for the Illinois law to be put on hold during their expected appeal to the Supreme Court. And the Supreme Court last week, with no dissents, said the law can go into effect until we make a further decision on it. That sends a message to the lower courts that is a law that they are allowing to go into effect. It's on the shadow docket. It wasn't a decision on the merits, but just like the bad shadow docket decision sent a message, like with Texas SB 8 back in the day, this sends a message as well.
So let's talk about this abortion law. This is this case, the methylprednisolone. It was brought to a crazy Trumpy judge on a docket that they knew they would get him, Matthew Kaczmarek. And in Texas, in Northern District of Texas, they knew they were going to get him. They knew he was a Trump appointee. They knew he was a complete zealot. He was like, that's it. The FDA is wrong, even though it's been approved since 2000, and the Comstock Act is legit, and let's go ban this thing. Now it's cooked up to them. This is a case, I feel like, where it's about abortion, but it's also about, can you take drugs off the market because you don't like what they do?
Well, yeah, this was the weird situation where you had Planned Parenthood and the FDA and Big Pharma all on the same side. We don't get that a lot.
This is ultimately could be devastating to Big Pharma.
It could, in a sense. We did have an example of sort of good news, such as it comes from this court.
Right. Good news. It needs quotes around it.
Yeah. Good.
Good-ish.
Yes. These 2023 edition news. Which was, now when this case was heard at the Fifth Circuit pulled back part of Kaczmarek's ruling. What they said is the original 2000 approval of methylprednisolone, the challenge to that was untimed. You can't bring it, you're too late. What the Fifth Circuit upheld was Kaczmarek's ruling as to the later changes easing access to the drug in 2016 and 2021. That includes the ending of the in-person requirement, so allowing it to be sent via mail. And the DOJ and Danko, who makes Mifeprex, went to the Supreme Court and said, we want you to hear this appeal to reverse the Fifth Circuit on those decisions. So to allow the eased access. The challengers to methylprednisolone's approval said, if you take DOJ's case, we also want you to take the underlying 2000 approval. We want to appeal the Fifth Circuit's ruling against us on that. And what the Supreme Court did earlier in December said, we're going to take DOJ and Danko's request about reversing the Fifth Circuit on the eased access, but we're not going to take the challenger's appeal of the 2000 approval. So that, again, for 2023 is a good sign. That says the Supreme Court doesn't even want to consider the 2000 approval. That is fine. That is safe and is not going to be on appeal at the Supreme Court. All that's going to be appealed, which is still important, particularly in a post-Roe environment, is the eased restriction. It allows for later prescription. It allows for fewer appointments.
Have they had the oral arguments yet?
No, that will be probably in April, could be in March. I haven't looked at the calendar. It would either be late March or late April.
Do you think that this Supreme Court, as you're listening to them, I want to ask you about this idea that Ali Mistal had told me once that he thought actually Amy Coney Barrett was the smartest of these new justices.
Oh, that's definitely true.
Okay.
It's like level degrees of difference.
But yeah, so talk to me about that, because I think that's pretty interesting. I mean, she's definitely a zealot, a crazy religious zealot, but let's talk about that.
The really interesting thing, and I just read somewhere about it. Oh, it was people were sharing information, news articles from when Sandra Day O'Connor was confirmed. And there was a line in the New York Times article from Linda Greenhouse from the day of her confirmation vote about the fact that basically you don't know what's going to happen after a justice is on a court for a long time once they're confirmed. The fact is that all of these justices that were basically handpicked by Leonard Leo were largely picked to overturn Roe, and they did that. But the fact is that the law is a very broad area. There's a lot of things that are covered by the law. And I think what we're going to see over time is that it's very easy, in light of the outcome in Roe, in light of some of the most clear ideological cases overturning affirmative action, that like to see these three new justices as the three Trump appointees. And I think there will be some ways in which they're similar, but they're also just very different. And I think over time, as they are on the court for longer and sort of stake out their areas of expertise, like we're going to start to see them in different ways. And I think the fact is that Justice Barrett is really smart. And I think we see that already in the ways in which sort of her and Justice Kagan engage on things, the ways in which she's engaged already with Justice Jackson on things. And while I would gladly get rid of her vote anytime that we could on the court, I don't think she's often going to be voting in ways that I agree with. I think that she definitely helps raise the level of argument in a way that honestly helps Kagan at times being able to fight with somebody at her level.
So is Kagan the smartest of the liberal justices?
I don't know about that. I think that Jackson is certainly holding her weight.
Yeah, she's very smart.
But we're still very new in her time on the court. I always say, like, you don't want to judge a justice their first like year or two, because like, especially if they've been an appeals court judge before, this is very different. You're making the decisions now. And if you were an appeals court judge before, you sort of had adapted to a way of thinking that was like deferring to what the Supreme Court's precedents were that you don't need to do anymore.
And so a lot of people think this year is going to be less insane than previous years of this court. Do you think that's right? Or do you think we're all setting ourselves up?
I think that's right. I think the big problem with this term is that some of the most important cases are the least sexy cases. They are these administrative law cases. There was this case over the method of funding the Consumer Protection Bureau, Consumer Financial Protection Bureau. There is going to be this relentless case over whether we keep deference to agencies. This issue of who has the final say, the executive branch, the legislative branch, the judicial branch, at different points in our history has changed over time. And as the federal government grew, it became pretty clear that there were so many decisions being made that you had to let the experts within agencies who had been hired, not political people, but people who were spending their lives working at the EPA, working in the Social Security Administration, working in the Securities and Exchange Commission. We have to defer to them to make these basic decisions about how we're organizing these things. And if the Supreme Court pulls that back and says, no, we're not going to defer to agencies, it could really upend the stability of a whole lot of agencies. And then with that, rippling out from there, a whole lot of industries.
Thank you so much for joining us. Thanks. That was great.
Thank you, Molly.
AI might be the most important new computer technology ever. It's storming every industry, and literally billions of dollars are being invested. So buckle up. The problem is that AI needs a lot of speed and processing power. So how do you compete without costs spiraling out of control? It's time to upgrade to the next generation of the cloud. Oracle Cloud Infrastructure, or OCI. OCI is a single platform for your infrastructure, database, application development, and AI needs. OCI has 4 to 8 times the bandwidth of other clouds, offers one consistent price instead of variable regional pricing, and of course, nobody does data better than Oracle. So now you can train your AI models at twice the speed and less than half the cost of other clouds. If you want to do more and spend less like Uber, 8x8, and Databricks Mosaic, take a free test drive of OCI at oracle.com/strategic. That's oracle.com/strategic. oracle.com/strategic.
When you have health insurance, it's easy to think, I'm covered, no worries, right? Well, not so fast. What about your out-of-pocket costs? That can be a lot of money for you and your family. And if you're like me, you can't help but wonder, was I overbilled? You're not alone. It's estimated that over 50% of medical bills contain errors. Unless you're a billing expert, how do you know your medical bills are accurate? That's why I want to tell you about HealthLock. What is HealthLock? It's a healthcare technology company that securely connects with your family's insurance. When your medical claims come in, HealthLock technology reviews the claims for errors like overbilling, wrong codes, and even fraud. HealthLock makes it easy to find and fix hidden errors, so you pay only what you owe. To date, HealthLock has saved its members over $130 million. Bottom line, insurance alone isn't enough. HealthLock finds medical bill errors before you pay. To save, visit healthlock.com. Do it today before you see another healthcare provider.
Hey everyone, it's Ted from Consumer Cellular, the guy in the orange sweater, and this is your wake-up call. If you're paying too much for wireless service, you don't have to keep having that nightmare. Consumer Cellular has the same fast, reliable coverage as the leading carriers for less. And for a limited time, new customers receive their second month free when they sign up and use promo code MONTHFREE by May 31st. So why keep spending more than you have to? Seriously, wake up and call 1-888-FREEDOM or visit ConsumerCellular.com.
Taxes, fees, and other third-party charges will apply. See website for additional details.
Like many of us, you might think identity theft will never happen to you. But consider this. There's a new identity theft victim every 3 seconds in the U.S. That's over 15 million people by the end of this year, equal to the populations of New York, Los Angeles, and Chicago combined. Even worse, identity theft victims often don't even know they're victims. That's why LifeLock Identity Theft Protection alerts you to identity threats, even the ones that don't show up on a credit report, like data breaches, fraudulent bank transactions, loan and credit card applications, and crimes committed in your name. If your identity is stolen, your own dedicated LifeLock U.S.-based restoration specialist will work to fix it. LifeLock protects you in ways that you simply can't on your own. Join now and save up to 25% your first year at LifeLock.com/news. That's LifeLock.com/news to save up to 25%. Identity theft protection starts here.
Mark Roscoe Lusto is a scholar of religion in Hungary and Romania, as well as managing editor of the Journal of Global Catholicism. Welcome back to Fast Politics, Mark Lusto.
Molly, it's great to be here.
So you have been in a lot of places. Explain to me what's happening in Western Ukraine right now.
So I just got back from 2 weeks of reporting in Ukraine. I was really kind of all up and down the western area of the country, up to Lviv and down to cities around the Slovakian and Hungarian border. And I have to say that the mood of the country right now is really anxious, very, very anxious, very insecure. The war is just grueling. The most professional soldiers, the ones who kind of had trained to be in the army at the beginning, they have died and recruits are replacing them. In the small western Ukrainian city where I was spent most of the time, which was really far from the front lines, you know, I had to pause in my car behind long funeral processions multiple times a day. There were air raid sirens. And people were, you know, they're very aware of the war and the way it's going. And it's causing a lot of people to have a deep sense of insecurity and unease.
Their economy was so flooded with aid money, right? I mean, now is it just completely dried up?
There is still aid coming in. The EU and certainly the US government is still sending aid. And there are humanitarian organizations that are working with the huge numbers of internal refugees in the country. You know, over 5 million people were displaced just inside Ukraine. But it is true that militarily, the summer did not show a lot of improvement in terms of the moving of the front lines. I spoke with one man, a friend who works for a humanitarian NGO. You know, he was really wanted to tell me about the kind of political situation that's going on in Ukraine right now. And he said that Zelensky has really boxed himself into a corner. It would be a great tragedy and really the West's fault if Ukraine had to cede territory to Putin, although it might have to happen, he said. The problem is that Zelensky has really staked his entire political career on winning back everything, every little inch of land. And so Zelensky is stuck between a rock and a hard place, because if negotiations do begin, he would really have to resign. So my friend said, you know, I don't know who takes his place. That's one of the other kind of really anxiety-provoking things. And it's not really clear if there's a better option. Zelensky's done such an amazing job.
Zelensky is losing the confidence of his people.
I wouldn't go that far, Molly. But, you know, I think that my friend finished everything he wanted to say by saying he's the best that we have.
Right.
So, you know, I wouldn't say that he's losing the confidence. I would just more kind of broadly say that it's a difficult time and people are really wondering what the way forward is.
Is there a way to make a deal here? It feels like they're going to just keep going with this. I mean, isn't there a way to make some kind of deal with Putin? Or do you think it's just he's so unreliable you can't?
I mean, I think history has told us that when you make deals with fascist dictators, doesn't lead to happy things for the rest of the world.
Right.
So
this is true, but I mean, I don't trust Putin, but I don't know where you go, right? Because there's no appetite from America, right? There's barely appetite for Israel. And Israel has sort of more of a historic relationship with American aid. And even they are just really may not even get any aid. So do you think there's any sort of Hail Mary here?
Well, I don't think we should be looking for easy solutions. You know, I mean, wars never end with, you know, easy, quick, idealistic and idealized endgames. That's not how geopolitics works, even when we're talking about kind of peaceful conflicts. And here we're talking about a brutal imperialistic state trying to take over another state. So I don't think there's going to be a Hail Mary. I think people who presented the conflict as something that could be easily won were, at the beginning at least, were, you know, optimistic, too optimistic. But the other thing, you know, I think that what we're sort of losing touch with, and this is why I went there, which was one of the reasons why I went and did this reporting, is that what Ukrainians are trying to do right now, and one of the reasons why we in the United States, especially on the left, should support U.S. military aid for Ukraine, is that they're trying to build a multiracial, multi-ethnic, multi-religious, open and free democracy. And that's really what we're trying to support in Ukraine right now, through military aid, through humanitarian aid, through all sorts of different kinds of aid. You know, we're talking about an aspiring European society. And, you know, Europe itself, the EU, has recognized that aspiration to be real and sincere by agreeing to open formal accession negotiations.
Yeah, but I mean, we're barely hanging on here.
Right. Get it when people on the left say that we have problems of our own at home. Not to demonize that position, but I would say that the left has an isolationist problem of its own that we need to confront. You know, that everybody talks about the isolationism of the right, but there is absolutely an isolationism of the left. And both are problematic. Not equally problematic, but problematic. So there have been increasingly strong calls amongst progressives to stop sending money to Ukraine, military aid and all sorts of other kinds of aid. And, you know, oftentimes those arguments are paired with the claim that we have injustices of our own in the U.S. to reckon with. And oftentimes people on the left say that the war is NATO's fault for expanding into Russian's sphere of influence and provoking Russia
I don't think anyone thinks that.
I mean, I've read it in The Nation.
Right. But I mean, ultimately, that's a very, very sort of horseshoe. I mean, Putin just decided this was an easy get for him. I don't think there's anything that Ukraine could have done that would have prevented it. I mean, he tried it before. You know, I mean, this is just he feels that Russia is still entitled to that. Nobody wants Ukraine to have to make a deal with Putin, but Ukraine might have to make a deal with Putin. What would that look like?
That's hard to say, Molly. I'm not going to be sitting around that table. I don't think that Ukrainians should approach that table anytime soon. I don't think that the U.S. government should force them or push them strongly.
I mean, I don't think the U.S. government can force them. The U.S. government is just one of the many kind of supports that Ukraine has. And there's really, I mean, there's certainly a school of thought that Europe may backstop them. But I'm just thinking about sort of like in the case of like you have sort of a limited window of what you can get done. What does that look like?
Well, so, I mean, I would say that, Molly, if you plopped yourself down in Ukraine and you said to the average person on the street, you're going to have to negotiate with Putin, you get thrown out of the room, not probably aggressively, but you'd get shown the door. If those conversations are happening, and I'm not saying that they are, but if they're happening, they're happening amongst Ukrainians.
Right.
I mean, it's not for us on the left in the U.S., public commentators or even politicians to start telling Ukrainians exactly how to handle that.
Right. It's more of a like a game this out with me question. Like, what can they do?
I can't answer the question. I can't speculate down that path because the consequences of doing that are just going to be way too strong.
Okay.
To publicly question the Ukrainian war effort right now, even despite all the anxieties and all the uncertainties that people have there, is too politically damaging. I mean, it plays into Putin's hands. Putin wants people to start questioning Ukraine's collective will to defend itself.
I mean, I just meant like if they can't get any more money, I mean, you know.
That also benefits him.
I know it benefits him. Here's the problem. It's like in my mind, and again, you have a problem in America, which is that people under 50, they are very anti-intervention. This may not be completely true, but from what I see anecdotally and what we're seeing is that people under the age of 50 really do not want to fund foreign wars because we've had so many disasters.
Yes.
What I think Biden has done really well is he's sort of giving Ukraine all of our old toys and making new ones. The problem is now that this war has become so hyperpartisan and you don't have Republicans who are willing to get on board with it, it gets harder and harder to get them the money that they need. And so they are going to ultimately, I mean, hopefully they get backstopped by Europe for a certain amount of time, but you could see a world where their choices become more and more limited. It's not up to America to do anything, but if they can't get the cash from America, they have a problem.
Well, I think the response to that is to say, let's get them the cash. I mean, I think it's still very possible. I guess I just don't share your pessimism. And I think it's up to us on the left to help Ukrainians make the case for why America should stand in solidarity with them, especially folks on the left. I was, you know, old enough to march against the Iraq war. You know, and I was living in New York City at the time, and I remember that we filled up the entirety of the East Side. We blocked traffic on multiple avenues to protest that criminal intervention. And I think it was one of the most stupid foreign policy decisions in, I don't know, recent history. But I don't think that we should let the shadow of that past mistake cloud our judgment now.
It's interesting because I also marched against the Iraq War and I was part of that and I was actually pregnant. I agree that the Iraq War was just awful and I agree. But ultimately, I think the problem in Afghanistan was a disaster, Vietnam. I mean, basically all the wars that America has gotten into since World War II. I mean, you could argue we don't have a great track record of nation building. And ultimately, my problem, like fundamentally, in a theoretical sense, is that like the end game is you're going to remove Putin and then you're going to nation build in Russia. I mean, that seems like a disaster, right?
Yeah, no, I mean, I don't think that's the end game at all. I mean, I also don't think that the U.S. is going to be nation building in Ukraine.
No, I don't either.
At least if we think of nation building in the way that George Bush used it in a completely ridiculous sense in Iraq, right? So the point being that the European Union has stepped up to the table and said, we're going to be helping Ukraine build a nation. Yeah, they're taking the lead on that. That's what it means when they have opened formal accession negotiations. You know, I mean, if you want to reinterpret that term, it's kind of a technical term. But what they're saying is, all right, let's work together to build an open and free multi-religious, multi-ethnic, multi-racial society.
Right, which is great. It's just not necessarily going to happen, right?
Well, nothing is ever guaranteed. I mean, we're talking geopolitics, right? We have to be realistic. But I think that the fact that we're doing this with partners, with NATO, with the EU, we're not footing the bill entirely by ourselves. This is not a George W. Bush type Hail Mary attempt at taking over the world and buying oil for the U.S.
I mean, not to be annoying, but with the first Gulf War, America had tons. They had a whole consortium of countries. I mean, I think it's hard to make the case for Ukraine when we're not in them per se, but there are two different wars now raging.
Right. You know, I am in no way qualified to try to draw lines of connection between what's going on in the Middle East and what's going on in Ukraine.
No, but I mean, it's more just exhausting resources and also like psychologically exhausting for the American voter.
You know, and honestly, I don't think it's actually exhausting America's financial resources. I mean, in relative terms, I'm sure that we spent a lot more in Afghanistan and Iraq.
But there was appetite for it then.
Right. It's the psychological appetite for it. And I think that isolationism on the left is a really, really dangerous thing right now. You know, I mean, I think that, you know, we need to find reasons on the left to support Ukraine. And I think creating an open society is a major, major reason, with partners like the EU and NATO helping Ukraine build an open society is really crucial. And I think that's a reason that the left can get on board to support aid for Ukraine.
Mark Lestow, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you, Molly. Molly, these conversations are always some of the most fun that I have.
That's it for this episode of Fast Politics. Tune in every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday to hear the best minds in politics make sense of all this chaos. If you enjoyed what you've heard, please send it to a friend and keep the conversation going. And again, thanks for listening.
Right here, right now. Find your beautiful new floor at Right Rug Flooring. Choose from thousands of in-stock styles ready for next day installation and all backed by the right price guarantee. Visit rightrug.com. That's RITERUG.com today to schedule a free in-home estimate or to find a location near you. 24-month financing is available with approved credit. For 90 years, we've been right here, right now. Right Rug Flooring.
Open a limited-time 11-month certificate at Kemba Financial Credit Union. At 5.25% APY, it's more than triple the national average, plus it's a safe and secure way to grow your money. Visit your local branch or kemba.org/cd for details. Offer expires May 31st, 2024. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. $500 minimum and $250,000 maximum deposit. Advantage status required. Comparison based on bank rate average. Federally insured by NCUA.
When you have insurance, it's easy to forget about your out-of-pocket costs. That can be a lot of money. How do you know you're not overpaying? HealthLock can help. HealthLock is a technology company that securely connects with your insurance and reviews your claims for overbilling, wrong codes, and even fraud. To date, HealthLock has saved its members over $130 million. To save, visit HealthLock.com. Do it today before you see another healthcare provider.
You ever get the feeling the city walls closing in, the concrete jungle suffocating your soul? You crave wide open spaces, the chance to connect with nature, maybe chase some elk, fish a private stream. Well, listen up. There's a whole world out there, and finding your own piece of it just got easier. Head over to land.com. They've got ranches, forest, mountains, you name it. Search by acreage, location, the kind of hunting or fishing you dream of. Land.com. It's where the adventure begins.